Read any good books lately? How about in the past year? We are going to talk about the best books of 2013 this hour, and we'll welcome your questions and your recommendations, too. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. What was your favorite new book of this past year? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at The Joy Cardine Show or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Alan Chews. He reviews books as NPR's Voice of Books. He's also a novelist who teaches writing at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for being back with us. So, what makes a book a great book?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. Not everyone likes the same books, or not everyone would call the same books great. It's a little bit like human relations, mainly, let's say, love, right? We can fall in love with certain people that other people don't understand at all. But for me, you know, there's a certain story drive. I want a plot, basically, that's going to keep me enthralled, and I want serious literary language, unless the character is telling the story in the first person and he comes from Brooklyn. I like beautiful sentences. I like music in the prose. And I want something, you know, it depends upon the genre. You know, I want a thriller that'll keep my mind off everything except the plot when I'm reading a thriller. When I'm reading something, you know, a little more serious, I want a book that will make me pause and think about myself and the world and the past and the present and maybe even ponder the future. You know, sit down and think about a sentence that I've just read for 10 minutes and then pick it up again and keep reading.
So did you have an absolute favorite new book this year?
Well, one single book, I can't. No, I deny that, Senator. I've got a list of maybe almost a dozen books that have just been, you know, gave me a lot of pleasure at various levels. As far as the most serious, I guess my favorite among favorites, there were four or five of them, actually.
Okay.
All That Is, the marvelous James Salter's new novel about a contemporary American Navy guy who returns to New York in the 40s and makes his way in the publishing trade. He falls in love, he divorces, has love affairs, and it just gives you, as you read it, a kind of deepening sense of life, both the sweet and the severe and sour part of it. And all the pages are just beautifully made, almost as though he carved them, chiseled them out of stone, just beautiful. But, you know, there's also a novel called A Tale for the Time Being by a woman named Ruth Ozeki, who lives in British Columbia. And it's a completely different kind of serious book. She puts herself in as the main character, and Ruth Ozeki, who lives on this island in British Columbia, walks along the beach and finds the diary of a Japanese schoolgirl who's been washed up in the wake of that Fukushima tsunami of a couple of years ago. Washes up on her beach, and she reads it, gets somebody to translate it for her from the Japanese, and becomes tangled up in the story of this Japanese schoolgirl and her own life story. And, you know, all the way around the other side of the world, there's a novel that's set in Somalia, in part, in France. It's called Submergence by a man named Legard, L-E-D-G-A-R-D, J.M. Legard. It's about a week-long love affair between a British spy and a woman scientist. They meet for a week in this hotel in France, fall madly in love, then go their separate ways. She to do deep ocean research, and he to try to find a way into this Somalian terrorist group that takes him hostage. And just beautifully written, and very exciting. It's a page-turner about mad love and the crazy world we live in.
Well, that sounds like a thriller and a romance.
Yes, it's a wonderful book. It's called Submergence. So I got submerged in that. stop me if I keep going.
No, so we've got all that is. We've got a tail for the time being. We've got submergence. Yeah, why don't you give us one more of your, you know, of your favorites that
two
are
more.
In the series. Okay, two
How about
more.
Two more?
Okay.
This extraordinary book by a Pakistani writer named Mohsin Hamid, Hamid, called How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia. And it uses the conceit of a how-to book for South Asians who want to make a big living. And it takes a country boy through his trip to the city and his rise in the business life of this Pakistani city. The chapters are instructions. Move to the city. Get an education. Don't fall in love. Those kinds of things. Learn from a master and so forth. And, I mean, which is a real gimmick as far as, you know, the book is concerned, but it's just a wonderful surprise to read your way through because his character is not generic at all. He becomes a serious, deep-feeling boy who becomes a man with a troubled life, however much money he makes, and he has family problems, and you really do feel for him. In a way, it reminded me a lot, believe it or not, of The Great Gatsby. It's kind of a South Asian Gatsby in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And one more completely different, a novel called The Daylight Gate by a British writer, one of the best British writers alive, a woman named Jeanette Winterson, about witch trials in early Renaissance England, and about the gunpowder plot when Catholic terrorists try to blow up Parliament and attack King James I, who was against the Church. And this is filled with violence and witchcraft and, again, great sentences.
Well, there we have five of our guests' favorite books of the year, and I know we will talk about more. And we want to know if you had a favorite book that you read this year that you'd like to recommend to us. What was your best read of this past year? And especially if it was a new book. But if it was an older book, that's okay, too. 1-800-642-1234, as we are discussing the best books of 2013 with Alan Chews, who reviews books as NPR's Voice of Books. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We have a number of people actually who did recommend books that aren't brand new books from this year, but I guess Alan Chews, we can't. Sometimes we don't maybe read books when they first when they first come out.
Yeah, that's true. Or we read it and we don't get it, and we set it down and we try it again. I mean, one of my earliest reading experiences. Well, I read pirate stories and all kinds of sea adventures and science fiction. I mean, that's how I started reading. But I picked up a copy of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man when I was about 11 or 12 years old. I had understood nothing. I read about four sentences and put it down, and then picked it up again when I was in high school and read a little further. And, when I started reading it in college, it all fell into place. So it took me three tries, but, it's one of my favorite books of all time. Mm.
Are you reading something right now?
I am, yeah. I'm reading, we review four or five fiction books a month on All Things Considered. But I'm reading February books already. I'm in the middle of the new Joyce Carol Oates novel. It's called Carthage, which is the name of the town in upstate New York, where the younger sister of the fiancé of a returning and very disturbed Afghan war veteran has disappeared. I'm midway through that book, and it's just... I can't wait to get on the airplane today and finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes out late January, early February.
Yeah, you're a real pro at this. How long does it take you to finish a book?
It depends upon the book, Joy. Really, mm-hmm. Every book has its own pace.
Mm-hmm.
The Oats is 600, almost 600 pages long, so it's going to take days and days and days to finish it. That Submergence, that Ledgard novel that I mentioned, or Ledgard, however he pronounces it, I read it in a day. It's only about 200 pages long and just pulls you in. And the thrillers do that, too. I'm reading a novel for February called The Counterfeit Agent by a former Times writer named Alex Berenson. And, you know, that just, you just devour that. It's kind of like candy or cake or wonderful fruit whipped cream dessert.
You know, we're going to try to, I didn't warn Christy Taylor, my producer, or Robin Cherry, my on-air producer, that we should keep a list of the books that our guest is recommending and the books that our listeners recommend, and we will we'll put that up on Facebook at some point.
People would appreciate that.
Yeah, so we will do that. We have Margaret who sent an email, and she writes, "I nominate Donna Tartt's
Donna Tartt,
The Goldfinch. Though I haven't yet finished it, I started reading it on the bus to work one day, and then I read another 30 pages during my lunch hour. Then I realized that I wanted to leave work so I could read it straight through."
Yeah, that's always a good sign.
Yeah, since that was not possible, I had to put it aside, so I will read it over my Christmas vacation. So tell us about The Goldfinch.
Well, you know, I haven't read it.
Okay, I thought it sounded as though you had.
And, you know, I have a kind of history with Donna Tartt in that she was a student at Bennington many years ago when I taught there. And for some reason, I've just never gotten around to reading her work.
Yeah, it says
I have a flaw. You see, I have one flaw.
That's just, I guess there is certain, you know, different books for different tastes. And different
people. And the funny thing, I'd never gotten around to reading J.K. Rowling either. I never read any of the Harry Potter, but then I just picked up A Casual Vacancy and read it, you know, her adult novel, her second adult novel, actually. And she's very, very good at what she does, writing about the turmoil and the family chicanery and political chicanery in this little English village. It's, again, almost 600 pages and just pulls you right in.
Well, this does sound interesting. Christy looked it up, and The Goldfinch looks like a novel about a number of things, starting with a teenage boy in New York who survives an explosion at the Metropolitan Museum.
So, yes, I think it's about art theft. But a lot of people have liked it, a lot. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you just can't get going with a book.
We are
personal relations, right?
Right, right. We are talking about good books from the past year, the best books of 2013, with Alan Shoes, who is an NPR book reviewer and also teaches writing at George Mason University. And we welcome your questions for him. Maybe you'd like a recommendation in a certain genre. We welcome the favorite books that you read in this past year. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. As the year wraps up and winter sets in, many might be spending more time indoors with a good book. We are talking with Alan Shoes, who reviews books for NPR, about the best books of 2013 and some of the books that we might expect in 2014. And we're welcoming your recommendations and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to the phone. Cynthia in Menominee is with us. Hello, Cynthia. What do you recommend?
Well, I'm hooked on audiobooks. I listen to them in the car, so I find a lot of great authors and try new books. But I just finished listening to The Art of Racing in the Rain. And it's told by a dog who has reached the end of his life. And he's talking about his owner and the family situation. So it's not so much about the dog, but dog lovers would love it because of the dog's insight.
Very it's one nice. Of those dog books, yeah.
You know, yeah. The other one I really, really liked is one I listened to, and I think the name of it is The Dog Who Danced.
Huh. Well, the Art of Racing in the Rain was a huge, huge success, and actually he came to read at George Mason and filled the hall. And it always reminds me of that, you know, Mark Twain wrote a dog story, and John Gardner wrote a dog story. I think it's called Trumpeter. And there's a sequence in Ken Kesey's novel, Sometimes a Great Notion, where you get a raccoon hunt from the point of view of the dog. And then, and I think there's even a moment or two in War and Peace when the family is in the living room and it's a cold winter evening and the dog moves around and thinks one or two things about the family. It's a wonderful feat when a writer goes into the mind of a dog.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Cynthia. Thank you for recommending that. That book, I think, came out in 2011, but that's still fairly recent. So, what do you think, Alan, of audiobooks? Is that
For a couple of years, I reviewed them for a magazine in New York when I was living down in Texas and had a long commute from the house to where I happened to be teaching at the time. And they kept me going. The books that wore the best on me were, you know, Stephen King and genre books. Anything else would take my mind off the road. So I think a really fantastic book on audio is kind of dangerous, like talking on the phone and driving at the same time.
Right. Do you like the hardcover bound book, or do you?
I do. Yeah. I do. I mean, I just think it's a wonderful thing to hold in your hands. I review so many books, many of them from galley proofs, you know, the soft cover early edition of a book that eventually will come out in hardcover. But I need to make notes and as I read along in the margins and in the back, inside back cover. And I just can't read e-books. A couple of my books are out as e-books, and I hope people can read them that way. But as far as reviewing goes, I can't mark up the screen. So.
Right. What's your newest novel?
Well, a novel that came out a couple of years ago called Song of Slaves in the Desert, which is a novel about Jewish slaveholders in outside of Charleston, South Carolina, and the African families they own. So there are two intertwining histories. I follow the African family from Timbuktu for several centuries till their ancestors are taken into slavery, and then they meet these Jewish family who emigrated from Holland, who become slaveholders outside of Charleston. And the second half of the novel tells the story of what happens when these two families meet. But I have a new book coming out in April. It's a book of short stories called An Authentic Captain Marvel Ring, which I hope rings a bell for you and your readers.
All right. Say it again, the title?
An Authentic Captain Marvel Ring.
Well, since that's coming out in 2014, is there another book that's coming out in the new year that you are particularly interested in reading?
Among the books I've mentioned, I think The Oats is the one that's closest to publication. David Grossman, the Israeli writer, has a novel coming out in March called Falling Out of Time that looks particularly interesting. And your own former Wisconsinian, Laurie Moore, has a new book of stories coming out called Bark that comes out in March, I believe.
Oh, bark as in the tree or a dog?
Yes, there's a dog in that story. So those as far as spring goes, that's the ones that seem closest to hand.
All right, let's go to David in Milwaukee next. Hello, David.
Hello.
Hi, David.
I wanted to recommend, I don't know if it's called True Steel or just A Life of Barbara Stanwyck. It takes her from 1907 to 1940 by Victoria Wilson. And I read it like in 3 or 4 days, and it's over 1,000 with the index. And it's just riveting, riveting
that's good
about
to know.
Hollywood.
That's good to know. That passed across my desk, but I rarely do nonfiction. But it's a great cover photo of her, and it looks like one of those really well-researched Hollywood biographies.
Thank you very much, David, for recommending that. We have a Facebook post from Mark, who recommends Unintimidated by Scott Walker. I think that's a political statement as well. But you,
it's a fiction. Surely that's a fiction.
Uh-oh. that is his memoir. What about, you rarely read memoirs?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I wrote a memoir before memoir was cool, but I rarely read them, just because it seems to me memoir is a kind of fiction in itself, and I'd rather read straight fiction than somebody's thing someone makes up in order to make their life seem interesting.
Let's go to Cam in Madison next. Hello, Cam.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm really enjoying this program. I am recommending a book that is not new. In fact, it was published in 1918. It's My Antonia by Willa Cather.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
one
it's
of my favorite novel.
It's absolutely incredibly written. It's beautiful. It's lyrical prose. And what is so interesting to me, having gone to school in Nebraska and now living here in Madison, Wisconsin, it's about the Midwest, but it's also about this bohemian family that moves to Nebraska, and they struggle so with the desolate prairie, and they had some means before they moved to America, but again, it was the sentence structuring. It was the beauty of the book itself. Oh, I'm so glad you've read it.
I teach it. I love it. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I cannot recommend it more highly. It's beautifully written.
Yay, I agree.
That is wonderful. I'll have to put that on the list now. So is that a newer book or an older book?
No, I think she mentioned it came out in 1918.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, you know, Cather is one of our best American writers in the period, and in a certain way, she got a little eclipsed by having contemporaries among the guys, you know, Hemingway and Fitzgerald and Faulkner. And she won a Pulitzer Prize, but as usually happens, for one of her late books, it wasn't as good as the best. And she also, you know, was gay when it was not fashionable to be gay and not even safe to be gay in certain circles. Her reputation is kind of less than the big guys' reputations, but she has written some of the most beautiful and important books in 20th century American fiction.
We are talking about the best books of 2013. What was your favorite book of the year? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Alan Chews, who reviews books as NPR's voice of books. He's also a novelist, and he teaches writing at George Mason University. Our next caller is Betsy in Madison. Hello, Betsy.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to recommend Transatlantic by Colin McCann. I think one of the best books I've read ever, and I'm wondering if your guest has read it.
Yes, yes, he's a wonderful writer.
You read Transit? Yeah.
Yes, yes, I would recommend it. And in fact, I was on the National Book Award committee that gave him the best book of the year for another novel about 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, he's a wonderful writer. He might look up his early stories, too, because he's a really good story writer, who made the transition from writing about Ireland to writing about his new native America, where he emigrated some years ago.
Books that have previously been published, I would like to recommend all of Charles Dickens, because I think his writing applies perfectly to the 21st century and to our current political situation. And it's just amazing to read his books and see how you can find our political leaders today in all of his stories. So I heartily recommend all of them.
Yeah, he's a coming young writer, isn't he? I mean, that's what makes a writer really great, that you can read them ages and ages after they're published. This playwright named Shakespeare, he's pretty good, too.
Yes. Tell us about, what is Transatlantic about, Alan?
It takes that story, the immigration story, and sort of reverses it and goes America to Ireland and Ireland to America. I mean, that's Colin McCann's kind of specialty these days, because that's the story that's embedded in his heart since he emigrated to the U.S. But I really like his early stories. I mean, he's written beautifully about his native Ireland. But the weather report that we've been listening to is suggests that it's kind of snowy and icy where you are. Here it's just rain, and in fact, warm rain for the moment. But I want to recommend a science fiction book that I read this year, which is filled with snow because it's set on the cusp of the Ice Age.
Okay.
It's called Shaman by Kim Stanley Robinson. And it's set in 30,000 B.C., and it's about it's the coming-of-age story of a Cro-Magnon kid named Loon, who has to hit the road and discover the world in order to survive. And Robinson is one of the best science fiction writers around, and as much as one can research this period, and research is kind of sparse, it's a fantastic novel about this boy's life in between the warming of the world and the ice age. And I dreamed I was living in this world for several nights, and it's rarely a book has that kind of effect on me. It's called Shaman.
Sounds good. Thank you for that recommendation. Steph in Spring Green is with us. Hello, Steph.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. What is this book that you want to recommend?
So the book I want to recommend is Close is Fine by Elliot Treacle. It's a collection of short stories set in Wisconsin, and it's also the 2013 Wisconsin Library Association Literary Award winner. It is a phenomenal collection of short stories and very beautifully written about rural Wisconsin.
I don't know that. I'll have to put it on my reading list. Tell me his name again, please.
His name is Elliot, and the last name is Treacle, T-R-I-E-C-H-E-L. And the award committee actually reads every book published by somebody in Wisconsin or somebody associated with in Wisconsin in the year 2012. So the book was actually published in 2012, but Elliot is from Wisconsin and is currently in Oregon. So
wonderful. Thank you, Steph, for recommending that. I'll have to check that out, too. We'll go next to Louisa in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. The two books I wanted to recommend that I read this year were The Sun by Philip Meyer. It's sort of a Texan epic that follows different members of a family in different generations, and it was quite interesting. And the other book was Cooked by Michael Pollan. That was his latest book. And they're both, really interesting.
Michael, Michael was a student of mine at Bennington College many decades ago.
I did not know that.
he's an exceptional writer and an exceptional person, too, because of the kind of work he's been doing. If you look at this week's New Yorker, the edition with the Pope on the cover, he's got an essay in there that will interest you. It's about intelligent plants or the possibility of intelligent plants. Now, I read everything he writes, and I just love his work. And he's actually cooked a meal or two for me. I tell you, he's as good a cook as he is a farmer.
Very fortunate.
A writer.
Yes, we've had him on as a guest on this show. We'll have to ask him to come back to talk about that article. I don't think we had him on for Cooked, though. I bet you somebody else did on Wisconsin Public Radio. The other book, though, that Louisa mentioned was The Sun. Yeah,
that big Texas epic. Yeah, I actually liked Meyer's earlier novel, American Rust, better. It's just a matter of taste. It's more compact, and it's about the story of an adolescent, East Coast adolescent who tries to make his way in the sort of underworld or netherworld or in-between world of this decaying steel town in Appalachia. But then he moved to Texas. I think he went to the Texas Writer Center for Writers, the Michener Center, and fell in love with Texas and gave over a number of years of his life to writing this epic.
I was just told that Kathleen Dunn did have Michael Pollan on after Cooked came out. So you can go to our website and check that out on the archives if you're interested in hearing the interview on that in April, I guess that was. All right, so we have Flossie who posts, I loved Trail of Dead by a Wisconsin author, Melissa Olson. Her series is such a fun ride. And we checked this out, and The Trail of Dead is the second in a series, supernatural kind of mystery thriller. So yeah, people want to check that out. Maybe you have some other recommendations when it comes to, I mean, you gave us maybe some, but if, any other recommendations when it comes to supernatural or mystery or thrillers?
Well, thrilling, there's a writer named Nathaniel Rich, who is rich in writing lore because his father happens to be Frank Rich, who used to write for the New York Times.
Oh, yes.
Smart guy. And his son is a wonderful writer. He published a novel this past year called Odds Against Tomorrow about a ecological disaster in New York City. And he wrote it before Storm Hurricane Sandy hit and flooded most of that New York City rim. But it's about a young fellow who has a wild talent for predicting worst-case scenarios about climate and ecology, and this guy becomes a hot commodity among New York businesses who want his predictions about what's going to happen. And the main set piece of the novel is this huge storm that hits Manhattan and floods the entire city. And it's really a knockout of a book by a young writer. What happens in this storm is just extraordinary. It's called Odds Against Tomorrow. And if you think about odd stories, Yoko Ogawa is this Japanese woman who writes some of the most bizarre stories I've ever read, and they're really well made and really entertaining. And she had a collection out this year called Revenge. When I describe a story or two, you say, can that be possible? But there's a story about a fashion designer who has a customer who's a woman who has a heart growing on the outside of her chest, and she asks that this man design a bag to hold her heart.
Goodness.
And then there's another story about a woman who keeps a Bengal tiger in her garden and hires someone to take care of it. It's really delicious and perplexing. I guess you'd call them horror stories, but really worth the reading if this is the kind of bizarre interest you might have. Mm-hmm. Especially the story called Welcome to the Museum of Torture.
It sounds quite interesting. That was they're all in Revenge.
Yes.
Okay. We are getting recommendations for some great books that came out in 2013 from our guest, Alan Chews, who reviews books for NPR. He's giving us some of his favorites from the past year, and we're welcoming your recommendations, too. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page, The Joy Cardine Show, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So what were the best books of the past year? Our guest book reviewer from NPR is giving us some of his top picks, and we want to know yours too. What books are you giving as gifts this year? What books would you like to find under your tree? What books do you recommend for all of us to crack open over the holidays? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What is the best book you read this year and why did you consider it so good? Our next caller is Tim in St. Petersburg. Hello, Tim.
Good morning.
Morning.
This isn't a recent book. It's one that I got from my brother, who actually got it from a sale out of the Appleton Public Library. But it's a biography of Stan Laurel. Now, it's very interesting, but the way I handled it was, after I read about one of his movies, I would stop reading and I would use my iPad and go online and I could watch the movie for free.
What a great thing to do. You're the prize interactive reader, Tim. That's great.
And it worked beautifully. I did the same thing with the Jack Nicholson biography.
Uh-huh.
But there I had to go to the library and get his movies. And again, it took a while to read the book, but I got to see the movies as they were discussing them.
That's a great idea, Tim.
Yeah, it really is, Tim.
So, and anything funny that you can recommend, Alan?
Funny. I don't read a lot of comedy,
Yeah, that's all right. I just thought since you mentioned Stan
nothing,
Laura, just
nothing in particular comes to mind. You know, if Woody Allen were still writing short stories, I would recommend those because he is one of the funniest and most serious short story writers alive. And then there's the Midwest's own Garrison Keillor, but he hasn't published a book in a while.
It's been a while, yeah. John in Middleton sounds like a humor book, John.
Yeah, this is a little self-serving because it's a book I wrote.
Uh-huh. And, but enough about it.
Thank you for being honest, John.
Well, I was only 65 when I published it, and I had to publish it myself because my agent, which took me 2 years to get, passed away. The book is The Non-Product Consolidation Operation. Uh-huh. And if I had been smart, I would have had an editor make me change the title.
That sounds really hilarious, John.
I know. But it is one of the funniest business books you'll ever read.
Give us an idea of a business humor that's in it.
Well, the manager pokes his hand on a sharpened pencil, and they fill out the OSHA report. And the remedial action is he's limited to the use of crayons.
You got me laughing already. Well, you might want to read How to Get Filthy Rich in Rising Asia, the novel.
Oh, all right.
Pakistan. It would be a nice companion to your book.
Thank you very much, John, for sharing that. Lynn in Hustisford is with us. Hello, Lynn.
Hi. You weren't funny. I love Fannie Flagg's books. Mm-hmm. And she came out with the all-girl filling station's last reunion this year, and I absolutely adored it. It does get serious in the idea that she writes part of the story, and it concerns the WASPs, the women who flew planes during the war to relieve some of the men to go fight the war, and the treatment that they received. So that is a little bit not funny. But the book itself is just absolutely wonderful, as are all of her books.
Yeah, any comment on that, Alan?
I haven't read her, but next time I want to laugh, I will turn to her immediately.
Thank you, Lynn, for that recommendation. Carrie in Rhinelander is with us now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi there, Joy. Thanks for taking my call today.
No, thanks for calling. What do you recommend?
Yeah, I read an excellent book. It started out as a short story. It's called Wool by Hugh Howey.
Oh, yes.
And it's a dystopian fantasy, kind of along the same lines as maybe The Hunger Games. I don't know if I'd call it quite young adult. But it's about humanity kind of clinging to survival in these subterranean silos. Their only look into the outside world is a camera facing in each direction, which periodically people are sentenced to go out and clean with a small wool pad. The book went over so well with its fans that they begged Hugh Howey to continue the series, and it ended up being, I think, 4 or 5 more books, and then 2 more series of books on top of that called Shift and Dust.
It's a
and
great
they were just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's a great success story because he started out self-publishing. He self-published the first book, and so many people were asking for it that word got around to the big publishing houses in the East Coast, and he got a contract for all the rest of those books. I haven't read them myself, but it's on my science fiction list.
Good. Did you give us all your favorites when it came to science fiction or fantasy?
Did I? Yeah. I have a couple more recommendations. One of them serious, and the other serious, but also widely entertaining. Mm-hmm. Robert Pinsky, who has been the poet laureate for a number of times, mm-hmm. published his, I guess you'd call it his autobiography in poetry. It's called Singing School, Learning to Write and Read Poetry by Studying with the Masters. And if there's a person you know, young person, or even a mature person who is trying to write poetry, I think this is a wonderful gift. There are 80 poems in the anthology, and Pinsky writes notes on each one about how he learned to write and read by reading these particular poems. Great poems and a wonderful commentary.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I have one more recommendation, and it's this book called Daily Rituals by a man named Mason Curry. And Curry gives about page and a half vignettes on the work habits of hundreds of modern artists, you know, painters, sculptors, composers, choreographers, and scientists. So you get everybody from Gertrude Stein to Gustav Mahler and Gershwin and Joyce Carol Oates and Louis Armstrong and Eric Satie and Stephen King, about how they go about their work. You know, when do they wake up? When do they sit down to write or chisel a statue out of stone? When do they splash paint on a canvas? When do they eat, drink, sleep? I mean, all of everything's here, from, you know, the compulsions of Flaubert to actually a surprising revelation that Paul Ryan's goddess of fiction, Ayn Rand, she did all of her work on speed. She's a speed freak, and you learn that. She's up all night on speed writing those wonderful books that have instructed Paul Ryan's political career.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it sounds that's Daily Rituals, and the other one was Singing School.
The other is called Singing School by Robert Pinsky.
Both of those sound very, very interesting to me. And we do have different, I guess I'm not a big science fiction type person or fantasy, but I do like books that maybe are a little bit, because these are, they're nonfiction in a way, aren't they?
Certainly the Daily Rituals book is, But it's gonna, you know, just anecdote after anecdote about how each of these great minds went about making his or her work.
Carrie in Bailey's Harbor is with us now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. This is not a new book. In fact, I'm not exactly sure when it was first written, but it's a wonderful story written by Ben Logan, and it's called The Land Remembers. And it's a story about a farm family. It's set in southwestern Wisconsin, and it is written by the youngest of four sons. And it tells, it's almost a kind of like Jerry Apps, although not, it's still different, but it is the most heartwarming story. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of it or if you've read it.
I haven't, but I'm building a little Wisconsin fiction list here.
Thank you, Carrie. That is a classic, and I believe it was a chapter a day selection that has repeated more than once because it is so beloved in Wisconsin. I don't know if it's ever going to... I'm sorry, Carrie?
No, I read to a group of seniors at a care center. And actually, this is the third time I've read the book to them, and it's truly wonderful. But you're right, I've heard it on Chapter a Day.
Yeah, thank you very much. Chapter a Day is, I think, maybe the longest-running program of its kind like this, Alan, where we have very talented public radio broadcasters, including Jim Fleming, reading from.
I love that. And there used to be a show on NPR called Radio Reader.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I remember 30 years ago listening when I had young children in the house, and they would take a nap, and I would listen to Radio Reader. It's a great idea.
Let's see what's being read this week. It's The Beautiful Mystery by Louise Penny. that's what's on tap.
But you know, the Pinsky book would be great too to read if you want to read poetry to some people.
Yeah, that would be good.
I mean, reading poetry is as close as I can get to performing music for anyone.
Let's take another call from Paul in West Bend. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Two books. One's current. This year is called The War That Ended Peace. And it was by Margaret Macmillan at Random House, and it's a brilliantly researched book that shows the folly, the ignorance of the European powers to march into this war, and the aftermath of creating these artificial boundaries in the Middle East that we're now living the horror of those things that happened or that they created back in 1917. The other one is an older book. It's called Cairo, The City Victorious by the American University Press in Cairo. And it was written by an economist editor called Max Rodenbeck. And it is just an all-absorbing book on the city of Cairo, which is over 5,000 years old, and the march of the clash of civilizations in that city. It's a microcosm from Alexander to Napoleon to the times today. It's all absorbing.
Thank you very much, Paul.
There's a wonderful new spy thriller writer, a man named Olin Steinhauer. And he's got a book coming out this spring that I've got my eye on. It's called The Cairo Affair. And it's a skullduggery, contemporary spying in Cairo. Interesting.
Yeah, let's go to Nancy in New Richmond next. Hello, Nancy.
Good morning.
Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. I would like to recommend Sinners and the Sea. It's by Rebecca Canner. It's her first novel, and it's the story of Noah's wife from her perspective. Huh. And Noah, his wife is never named in the story of Noah and the Ark. And she's telling the story from her view. And it's very entertaining and very educational.
And what is Noah's wife's name?
Well, she's nameless until the end.
Oh, I see. So you have to read it.
I love those books that take characters who stand off sort of to the side of these great epic adventures, and somebody gives them voice in a novel. I think maybe John Gardner started that with his novel Grendel, which is about the child of the monster that destroys the landscape in dark Celtic Scandinavia. But there's also a novel called Ahab's Wife, which tells the story of Moby Dick from the wife's point of view. These are really fascinating. And of course, Hemingway's wife's novel that went big last year.
Let's take Robert and Stevens Point now. Hi, Robert.
Hello. The book I was going to recommend is If Kennedy Lived, by Jeff Greenfield.
Yeah,
it's I major in history, and I like to imagine alternate scenarios.
I'm sorry, Robert, because we're so short on time. Thank you, though. If Kennedy Lived by Jeff Greenfield. Well, we'd have just a minute or so to go. Ellen, do you want to leave us with? With one last recommendation or one book that we should anticipate for 2014?
Well, of all the books I've mentioned, I think I would read the Rufo Zeki and the James Salter novels and Submergence, just beautiful books, each different in its own way. As far as forthcoming, I think I'm only halfway through the new Joyce Oates novel, but it's one of her big books, and I think it's really powerful and fascinating and certainly one of the big books to read this year. It's called Carthage.
Will do. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Ellen Shoes reviews books as NPR's Voice of Books. He's a novelist, and he teaches writing at George Mason University. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing this program. Thanks to Robin Cherry for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. And I hope you are with us tomorrow at this time. We are going to have a special credit card edition of On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is off tomorrow, but we will have an expert on controlling credit card debt and managing our spending on credit cards. It's a credit card edition and a credit score edition of On Your Money tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.